שלום לכם, תודה שאתם מצטרפים.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the New Life show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello Dr. Lightman. Hello, hello. Hello Nitza Mazoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about communication in a family with adolescents or teenagers. We know that communication in a family is something that's not that simple, especially when the kids become teenagers. So this is what we're going to talk about today. Nitza, please. Yeah, communication in a family is not a simple matter. All the more when our children, when they were little, there was good communication. Somehow they listen to us, to our opinions, and suddenly they're moving, they're shifting into adolescence, and our communication's changing. And this is a very serious challenge, both for the teenagers themselves and also the parents that don't really know how to reach some kind of contact, communication, talk, how to talk to them, how to relate to each and every situation. So the first question is, what is the best possible kind of communication that a parent can expect in a phase where his children are advancing and are crossing into, or that they're at the ages of adolescence, or from the ages of, suppose, 11, 12, and until they're about 18, Dr. Lightman. I'm talking from the point of view of the wisdom of Kabbalah. Each of us is an egoist. And in communication between us, not with children, but between us, each of us, if he wants to communicate with someone else, he has to adapt himself to that other person, and the other person has to adapt himself to. So, because each has his own state, condition, perception, inclination, mood, worldview, all these particular parameters, this is one thing, and also the person. But if they want to communicate, they need to feel the state of the other person. And each of them has to at least somewhat restrict himself, what he feels, wants, expects, and to adapt himself, adjust himself to the other person. And this is how usually, or what usually people do as much as possible. The question is, can we demand such? Really? I'm approaching the problem very directly. First of all, how do children understand altogether that in our day-to-day communication with other people, we have to adjust ourselves, adapt ourselves to others, that it is mandatory, since we're human beings, we're not a part of, you know, pack of wolves, even though that they have good communication there. And besides, that we need to also give the children an example of how do we adapt ourselves to each other. And this is something that has to be done very clearly and I'd say conspicuous, raging, screaming way, shouting way, that the children see that dad disagrees with mom, but he tells them quietly, I disagree with her, but I have to adjust myself, adapt myself to her, he tells them quietly. And then he does it. Well, a bit in an exaggerated way for the children to understand what he's doing. But this is the example that children eventually understand, and you have to explain to them that a family is the connection between several people, and the connection is built on concessions. That's the main thing. That's the magical word, concession. That there can be no concession toward each other unless each annuls himself toward the other person. And then there's connection between them. Otherwise, there is no connection. There is some kind of a natural compatibility, or that it is worthwhile for them to do because of different conditions, goals that are beyond them, that it's beneficial, that as a result I'll succeed, I'll gain, otherwise I can't, like we do when we connect with some stranger or at our place of work. But really, a good connection in the family, proper connection, has to be built on that we understand that we are going, each of us, to pay for it with our ego, and I am willing to make this sacrifice in order to be in this connection, because if we really make an effort to see what goes on inside the connection, we gain more than we lose. That's it. So what you said is that, first of all, what we have to understand and also communicate it to the teenager is that there has to be some kind of compatibility between us, because adjustment or suitability, because that's the basic condition for it. And now there's also some principle that's different than the common approach, because nowadays the common approach is to show teenagers in general that there is a consent between parents, not to, make the disagreement stand out, but, you know, you're saying to show them an example, and it is the opposite example to what we're used to, Dr. Lathan, even the opposite. You have to, like, act this out before them, like in a theater, that we disagree, that we're in strife, and we don't understand each other, and each of them explains to the children how much he does not understand what the other demands for the children to see it. And afterwards, we show them an example of how each of us overcomes and is in connection with the other. Nitsa. So if up till now the direction was to hide the disagreements between the parents, Dr. Lathan, depends until what age. Nitsa, what age, Dr. Lathan, depends very much on the family. I can't exactly say. But nonetheless, you have to start relating to them as the grown-ups, for them to learn from it. And so they will take into account our attitude toward them, that we even consult them, that we talk to them, seek their advice. They're truly as family members, not all the time as children, that we tell them, shut up.
Nitsa.
By showing that we're in disagreement, and we're not talking about young children, they're 13, 14, what does that build in them when on the one hand they encounter some kind of disagreement and our ability to overcome it? Dr. Lightman, it builds a behavioral pattern in them. Nitsa, that says what? That there are disagreements appearing between us, Dr. Lathan, all the time, Nitsa, and it's natural and okay. And upon that, Dr. Lathan, we have to reach agreement, some kind of completion. Nitsa, so we're all the time leading in that direction, and in this way, I'll ask, what happens when there is a disagreement between the teenagers and their parents? Is it something that they also learn from? Dr. Leibman, of course. Of course, Nitsa. And what implications does it have, Dr. Leibman? So they see examples about what happens between the parents, and also when I have a problem with one of the children in the family, then I can talk to him. Really, almost as equals. I can also talk to this about this to the other children. Depends about what, of course, but it could be something gentle, you know, subtle. And this is how we come to a state where there's nothing to hide between us, but to the contrary, all of us understand our nature, our conditions, and we're aware of them. And that's how we advance in life. And at least the pattern that exists in the family, we later have to see how they carry it on in their families, at their place of work, etc. Okay, let's see. How does this pattern, Dr. Leibman? I just want to point out one principle. What I want to happen in the life of each and every child when he grows up and builds his family, I have to give him clear examples from our family about it. Nitsa, so anything that he can learn about the connection between us, the parents' attitude toward each other, all of these kinds of connections is something that will later on build in him the ability to build his ties. Dr. Leibman, yeah, it is an example that he won't be able to leave. It's above him. What he absorbs in the family during childhood, it remains. Owen, Dr. Leibman, as it says, raise a child in his own ways, Owen, because this will accompany him his entire life. Now, a question that I'm getting now online, are there fixed or permanent actions that we have to do in the family, like having workshops in order to solve problems? Should it be a part of the family routine, Dr. Leibman? It depends on the parents. To what measure do they understand what needs to be done, and what communication do they already have with the children? The truth is that we can have workshops about it and give explanations. Like with Nitsa, like with other psychologists. I think that it's good. Oh, and now suppose parents went through such training and they start getting this integral point of view about things. Should they introduce workshops at home with teenagers as a part of their day-to-day life? Dr. Leibman, again, if the parents are ready and they feel that confident that that's correct, then of course. Oh, and how do you teach teenagers to deal with their eruptions of anger, etc.? Dr. Leibman, example. Again, there's no more than an example. You have to show the children how angry you are at someone in the family, and afterwards to show them how you calm yourself down forcefully. Not that you forgot about it over time, that, you know, you simply forget about it, but that you forcefully calm yourself down and you show that to them, and you even turn to someone that you got mad at and maybe even ask for forgiveness. Nitsa, for example, it is very common nowadays when teenagers are angry. And, you know, it happens plenty of times. They're angry at the world, at their parents, at many things, teenagers. And usually, you know, the parents try to encourage the children to explain what happened, why are you angry, from you understand something else, Dr. Leitman. Only an example. Nitsa, no point in getting into a discussion with a teenager, why are you angry, Dr. Leitman. He doesn't, or she, they don't even want to say why. I'm not demanding of them to open their heart. Maybe it's hard for them. And how come it's something that I'm asking them to do? Oh, and what then, Dr. Leitman? To simply give an example of how to calm down and properly arrange the relations and go back to the orders of life. Oh, and next question, a follow-up on the previous question about eruptions and anger. What do you do in a situation where the teenager, he slams the door and leaves, yells and leaves. What does the parent do now, Dr. Leitman? Nothing? Nothing. Doesn't do anything. As if nothing happened. And after some time, when the child comes back, when life goes on, after 2 or 3 or even days or even a week, then if there's an opportunity to sit down together, the parent says that nonetheless he'd like to scrutinize that situation, you know, calmly. Nitsa, and then what? He does ask what caused the teenager to erupt, Dr. Leitman. Nah, he can't ask. But this is something that you have to adjust the conversation and the situation to all these things. Maybe it's not the same parent that supposed the outburst of anger was toward the father, so maybe the mother does it, has this talk, softening things, asking about it in a way. Oh, and in the presence of the other parent, Dr. Light, yeah, even that way. Oh, and another question. What is the purpose of education at the age of adolescents as opposed to when they were children? What is the big goal of raising teenagers, Dr. Leitman? Giving youth examples for proper behavior inside the family. Such examples, actually. According to the example, does he act? Altogether, we activate ourselves according to such examples, like pictures. You know, such a picture, accordingly, we behave, act. Oh, and all life long, Dr. Leitman, yeah, every time we enter a new frame. Oh, and another question, what is the role of the mother and what is the role of the father when educating teenagers? Dr. Leitman, they have to be connected, not to show that they're so connected to the children that each of them can also take the side of the other person. Oh, and I don't understand, Dr. Leitman. Not that mom and dad always have the same opinion, but each of them can also accept the opinion of the child, adolescent, and not that because he's a parent, then he already identifies with the other person automatically, with the other parent automatically. Owen, do the mom and dad have specific roles when children are growing up, when they're teenagers? Dr. Leitman, it's very flexible. I can't say in relation to boys, to girls, some period and childhood, I don't know.
Okay.
They'll understand it themselves. Nitsa, what will cause them to feel that this parent is there for them 100%? Because it's really a feeling that the teenager is really lacking. Dr. Leitman, I don't know how to insert it into the awareness, into the family, that the entire family exists, so that the children will grow up successfully, not even you know, correctly, but successfully. This is something that they have to feel, that all in all, this is what the parents want. So if we as parents give the teenagers this feeling all the time that we want for them to grow up successfully, to be successful, then it also builds this feeling that they can trust us, that we're there for them, that they can trust us, because many times, specifically this, that is flawed. There's a feeling that I can't exactly trust my parents. Dr. Layton, no. Here I think that the parents need to try to build, along with everything that goes on in the family, to try and build. Try nonetheless build
геддер ביטחון,
some kind of
אבא ואמא יש להם איזה מילה,
that the mom and dad, they have a strong word
על כיוון החיים,
about the direction of that teenager in life.
אצלי זה היה כך בדוח, גם כן עם הבן.
In my family, that was had was for sure with my son and also both the girls. Oren, is it possible to build a good communication with the child when he becomes a teenager? And if so, how?
קודם כל, לא לשבת על הילד.
Dr. Light, first of all, not to sit on the child's head, not to suffocate him, not by hugs and not by, you know, not with handcuffs. That's one thing.
To
the measure to which the child wants to be in connection with you, you're in connection with him. He has to know that you're always accessible. But usually, the approach has to come from him. There have to be specific days for each and every child, and maybe even hours in those days where it is common for them to connect to their mom and dad, wherever they are. Contact them wherever they are. And this way to try to somehow, nonetheless, influence their life. And, you know, in any way that you can. Oren, how do parents create a situation where they can give the teenagers, their teenage kids, the direction in life? Dr. Lightman, they have to feel that we as parents are giving them almost unlimited freedom up to a certain limit. And when it so happens that they are trespassing that boundary, then the parent can get up and show his force, all the habits that he has inserted in the child, in the adolescent, and now it's already maybe a teenager, and he can determine his approach to the child's life. The child could be 20 plus. That nonetheless, this is what the parent leaves for himself for times of trouble, so to speak, for difficult times, that then he gets up and takes the reins into his hands. Nitsa, what will give them confidence? What will give teenagers confidence, Dr. Lightman, that they know that their parents standing behind them, and that they have a home, which is also a haven, which is a warm corner for them. And this is something that's left in them for life. But nonetheless, as much as the parents are demanding several basic things from them, not to change direction in life, from, you know, like, there are many things that go on nowadays, like children know. Nonetheless, children have to consult their parents in relation to important principal matters, but this is what they have to know, that they have that corner, mom's home, dad's home, however they want to call it, and they can come and always get a warm approach, attitude. Oh, and what is the dominant feeling that I want to create as a parent with my teenage child? Dr. Lightman, inner connection, that a child that was in the family nest, this is how he has to feel, that this place, this connection is left and does not disappear. Oh, and Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Dr. Lightman, good luck. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.